Welcome back. Thank you so much for joining me on another episode of Beyond Deconstructing. Now, for any of you guys that are viewing this and not just listening to the audio, you may be wondering why I am in a different location, why I have my coat on, why I don't have my microphone and all that good stuff. Well, if you guys have listened to or watched my vlog series Untethered, which I highly recommend that you do, you know that I am traveling for the entire month of February, and I did a handful of interviews in January before I moved out of my apartment and before I left the States, and I am editing and posting them while I am traveling, hence why this episode is 2 days late. And also why I am sitting in a hotel room without my equipment doing this introduction. And I'm also doing this introduction because in this episode, my guest and I went directly into our conversation and I didn't really set up who it is. So this is actually the first time I have a repeat guest on. I spoke with Dr. Lilith Butler. She is literally, she's just one of my favorite people. She is such a beautiful person inside and out, such a beautiful soul, and I resonate with a lot of her content and what she's kind of going through at this moment when it comes to unmasking both your autism and understanding fully who you are, you know, when it comes to your sexuality, when it comes to your gender and all those things, because they are connected to the autistic brain. And so this conversation was so refreshing. I always love talking to her. And we touched on a lot of things that we touched on in the first episode that we recorded together, but we expanded on it a lot more, especially when it comes to toxic spirituality and how a lot of autistic people can fall prey to cultish type activity. But on the same or on the other side of that, we also talk about how when we have a strong sense of justice and we're trying to like help people, that sometimes it can come across in a negative and toxic way as well. So again, as I always do, I'm going to stop flapping my gums and just let you guys listen to the conversation. But I did just feel like putting in a little bit of a disclaimer there because, like I said, we went right into the conversation because we genuinely enjoy speaking with each other and we just started talking. And it wasn't until like halfway through recording that I realized I didn't even set it up. So this is me setting it up. I hope you guys enjoy. And yeah.
I actually, oh my goodness, I really enjoyed our last conversation. Did you have a chance to view the whole episode once it was out?
Yeah, it was really fun. I loved recording it with you too. I had so much fun talking with you.
Absolutely. I feel like it's so easy to talk to you. Aww. I love that. I love when it's I love when it's not forced. And so like, I'm never anybody to throw shade, so I leave names out of it. But like, I spoke with someone recently who's also autistic, and it was actually the first time in a while where I felt like I really don't want to be in this conversation right now. Like, I kind of like it's laborious to talk to that person. And I was like, you know, I was appreciative for it because we're all a spectrum. Like, just because we're both autistic doesn't mean we're going to click like as people, you know. But it was a little disappointing because I was like, wow, like this is a very like labor intensive conversation. Like, it almost feels like I'm speaking to a neurotypical, but like worse, because I'm like, I know that you're not insinuating anything by what you're saying, but it's coming across still very like cold and detached. And I'm like, I don't know how to come up, you know. But that's just to say, like, I feel the exact opposite when I'm talking.
I'm really glad to hear that. I feel the same way. Talking with you feels really effortless and super fun. I'm curious how you navigated that conversation.
It wound up being more like interview style. So like, I had to keep driving it by like asking questions because it wasn't a very reciprocal conversation. I very much drove that conversation. And I feel like that's why it was so like, labrous on my part because it was like it wasn't reciprocal.
Yeah, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so I'm like, okay, so we're not really clicking here. I mean, like we agreed on some points, but it's kind of like our communication style just doesn't really mesh. Mm-hmm. And so like it was just like very eye opening. It's like, yeah, this is why it's important to kind of like have that rapport and like know that it's gonna be kind of like free and easy to talk to. To each other. So so I'm glad I still do those like little meet and greets before I do like full podcast episodes because they're
before you just like jump into it.
Yeah. So I'm like, if a half hour was this hard, I don't know what an hour, you know, would be like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm curious. I'm curious because I noticed that like I communicate really well with people who are like ADHD and then also like ADHD. I feel like there's a communication style that comes with the ADHD that like works really well together. I wonder if someone is just autistic without any, you know, any ADHD, if that would make a difference in the, like the communication styles, driving versus not driving.
Yeah, no, I think that that's a good point. I didn't even think about that because I don't believe this person says they had ADHD. I believe they are only autistic. And that could be something because I think info dumping is more on the ADHD side. And yeah. I feel like when you click over something and you are also someone who kind of has a tendency to overshare or like likes to info dump, it does make it a little bit easier to have it feel a little bit more reciprocal as opposed to like, I'm talking at you. I feel like I'm talking with you. And I appreciate those kind of conversations a lot more than it's just like a one-way street, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 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 Me too. I get that.
Absolutely. So one of the things that I really appreciated that we started to touch on the last time that I really wanted to start expanding on is like spirituality and stuff like that. Especially when it comes to like what's going on now with autistic TikTok. I don't know if you like know Allie Starts a Cult.
Yeah, I'm familiar with their channel for sure.
Okay. And like everything that's going on and like her content lately.
I feel like I've caught a little bit of it with the toxic spirituality and someone losing their life and their I don't know the full range of what's happening at all, but
yeah.
I have like very brief.
And no worries. So I'm going to say like, I haven't been like keeping tabs on it either, but I'm glad you understand that they were talking about toxic spirituality. Right. Because like what I'm seeing happening right now is that like a very like genuine concern about people taking or not being able to connect or ground these very like esoteric ideas into like a reality. There is danger in that. And so there are some people who get to a point where they're like, yeah, I want to like ascend and like take their own lives. That's kind of like what's happened.
Yeah.
But my concern is that it's starting to like cause this like negativity in our space.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like this is something that needs to be called out or needs to be talked about, but in a way where it's more like reaching out and like olive branching, like, hey, look, you're not wrong to think that you are something, you're an alien in some kind of ways, because in this society, if you think a certain way or if you process things a certain way, you are. But it is important to understand that that doesn't mean that you're you know, communicating to galaxy Startron, and that's not to make fun of anybody, but that's like what some people believe and think that they have to do things like unalive themselves to like ascend further. And that's where it does get into the psychosis. But like, I just feel like the way it's talked about now doesn't do anything to help. And it comes across as like shaming, like they're shaming them as opposed to like loving and showing and being like, hey, I see you. Yeah. And I think that that's what needs to be talked about a little bit more is like, look, yeah, you have a genuine concern because it can get to a point where people take it too far. But at the end of the day, like, are you trying to help people or are you just trying to shame them? Mm-hmm. Because we need people to understand what it really is so that they can actually, like, you know, be okay and embrace themselves. And if you still want to call yourself a starseed, sure, you're a starseed, but just understand that, mm-hmm. what that means.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's really tricky because when people have been hurt by certain systems or groups of people, like, that pain is carried and the anger is carried, and like so then the concern that gets communicated has all of their own pain latched onto it, and it gets kind of pushed on the people that they're concerned about and communicating with. Mm-hmm. But when anyone, I mean, you can see it. I always come back to like little kids because we're all just little kids. But when anyone is like being talked down to or shamed or yelled at, like the automatic response is just defensiveness and almost like a doubling down of what they're already doing, you know, because there isn't like really acceptance and space for them to like be, even like be in a space where they can kind of reevaluate because they're being attacked. So they're just right. trying to protect themselves, you know? And then, yeah, of course, when there's shame, shame is just, gosh, it's just the most toxic human experience, I think, on the planet. It's just, there's nothing good that ever comes from that. So I think that anytime we're addressing anyone for anything, like if we can do anything to avoid shame, like the better, you know? Otherwise it's just, there's just nowhere to go from there.
I totally agree. And it's unfortunate that shame and guilt and fear are the three major driving forces that most people use and most systems use to like maintain compliance or maintain uh-huh. the status quo. And I feel like if we have any, oh my God, it's so crazy. Last night I was talking to my big sister for about 2.5 hours. It was a pretty good conversation. Uh-huh. But she brought up that Martin Luther King quote, and I'm probably paraphrasing, but it's like, you know, darkness can't drive out darkness, only light can do that. Uh-huh. And so if our goal is to like enlighten people, mm-hmm. how can you do that by like trying to shame them and like, you know, shame and shame them and like keep them, you know, feeling bad about themselves as opposed to uplifting them and empowering them and be like, hey, you are different, but this is why. Like, let me learn a little bit more about your brain and how it works and like see what's going on there. And more likely than not, you're going to see there's some flavor of neurodivergent because they think outside of the norm. That's mm-hmm. all neurodivergent means, is that your neurotype, the way you think, diverges from what is deemed to be typical. That's literally all it means. So that's why I started to be more specific when I talk about autism. But I do think that it's important to point out that, you know, you're probably, you know, a little spicy up there if you think mm-hmm. those things, and you might learn a little bit more about how your brain works and why you believe those things, and some things may make sense.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing too. I feel like, you know, those of us who like do, you know, do have different nervous systems and brains, like we go to these places like spirituality communities and things like that in order to find answers for our experience that is so much different from our peers, right? Like we're trying to find ways to explain like, why am I different? And sometimes you find some really far out explanations, but they make sense. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, oh yeah, like I experience all of what you're talking about right now. I must be that. Like, it must be, you know, I must be a starseed, or I must be an alien. And I'm, you know, like, even like, you know, experiences like synesthesia and things like that. Like, you know, it's just,
yeah,
these wild experiences that we have because our nervous systems are different, can be explained from all these different ways. And, if we don't have any thing to ground it to, I feel like it would be pretty easy for someone to get kind of like lost in that. And, we're also kind of pre-wired for like, you know, like, we have more of an ability to like become delusional and things like that, you know? And so
yeah,
it's tricky, but it's like, that's a safe space for those people to understand themselves. And if we're not creating a safe space for them to understand themselves in a grounded way, and like, you know, this is unsafe. Like, there's no way they're going to come to it. Why would they?
Absolutely.
There's, you know, it's dangerous. It's like, no, there's only shame and anger and fear over there. I'm going to stay up in the stars, you know?
Exactly. And then it creates even more separation because it's like, look, you see how unascended they are and how much, and it's a superiority and it's this dichotomy. And I always say, yeah, like we don't need to focus on like the energy that we use to focus on how different we are could be used to help humanity in the ways that matter, because the ways that bind us are the only things that actually really matter. Like, we all need shelter, we all need food, we all need companionship and love and understanding. As long as we have those things, it does not matter what anything else on the surface is. It doesn't matter who you vote for, if you vote. It doesn't matter who you love, if you love. If you love multiple people, it doesn't matter if you worship, if you worship more. None of those things matter at a base level. They only matter to help bring you together with your tribe. They don't matter to separate us, but that's what we do. We focus on them so much, and literal wars have been started over religious differences, and war, and people literally result to violence because of differences in opinions and beliefs. When at its core, it doesn't matter because we're all human beings with the same needs.
Exactly. At the end of the day, we all just want, you know, like our basic survival needs met and like love and acceptance and belonging. And like, that's it. That's all we all want. You know? It's like, that's it. But we get like so divided and so, just violent about beliefs and different stances and perspectives and opinions. But when I think that, I'm sure are familiar with this, but like the seven stages of why or something, I forget like what that's called, but you know, it, like someone presents a belief or an opinion or something like that. And you like trace it, you just keep asking why.
And it gets
you down to like the root of the thing. And I feel like if we were to do that with like most of our beliefs that are conflicting, we would come down to like the same underlying thing of why, you know what I mean? But it's like, it just branches off in all these different ways based on our life experiences and perspectives and things we're told and conditioning and all of that. But we're all just human.
Absolutely. I love that you brought that up. Like, that's my favorite question. I don't think I had heard of it put that way. Like, what did you call it? The rule of seven or?
I don't even know. I think there's like a title for that technique. But I think it's like the seven stages of why or something like that. I don't know. But I know
I love that.
Last why seven times to get to of the actual why. Because what we think we want often isn't like what we actually want. It's, you know what I mean?
I'm like, my biggest, like, I don't want to say mantra, but kind of like driving force is the why behind the what. Like, I need to know that. So like, that's what the whole like idea behind deconstructing is, the why behind the what, this thing that we have, why do we do it? Mm-hmm. And that's always seen as such a threat, because any kind of system is based off of like blind compliance. Like, it only works if people comply and don't ask why. And so as soon as you ask why, like you were saying, even a lot of the times the first why gets people upset, mm-hmm. because it exposes how thinly veiled and how like flimsy like this house of cards is that we're in, mm-hmm. and whatnot. And I'm like, I realize now that's why I've gotten into trouble so much, because like I'll just matter of factly point out stuff like, you know, why are we doing this? We shouldn't be like, this doesn't make any sense. And then like all of a sudden I like lack nuance or something like that. You know what I mean? Like,
but that's the thing. These like systems and structures are like only put together because they're keeping our focus on the what, you know, like they're only standing because they're keeping our focus on the what, and people get so caught up in the what. But there's always so much beneath it. And, you know, these, things that the why is when it's like a negative intention, of course they're not going to want us to ask. But also I think that, yeah, I don't know. I wonder what it is about humans that causes like such an us versus them mentality. Like I understand it from like, you know, a biological standpoint and safety and like, you know, things like that. But I just, in this day and age, I wonder like why we're still so driven to do that, because it's just so pervasive and so mm-hmm. intense.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I feel like at least when it comes to Western cultures, there's such a push for individualism that it's like, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. Like we are ingrained to like not have community.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's been conditioned out of us.
Absolutely. And so, and then we look at other like cultures who still value community and still use community, and we look down on them as like, they can't do anything without their, but it's like, we actually would get further if we adapted those things, but because it's so ingrained in us that I got to get mine. And if I get mine, for in order for me to win, someone else has to lose.
Yeah,
because that's kind of the mentality that we have as a culture. I think that's part of the reason why there's still such a us versus them. It's like, well, if you're not with me, you're against me. And if you're against me, then I need to like, you know, crush mm-hmm. you to be able to like lift myself up. And I'm just like, but if we realize that like, it doesn't have to be that way. It doesn't have to be us versus them. It's us and them. It's like, look, like we're over here, my tribe, me and the people that we're cool with, we're over here. You and your people are cool and you're over here. And yeah, we don't have to fight each other or make each other like be like the other. Like it's like,
let's coexist.
Exactly. Coexistence. Like that's really all I want is like equity.
Yeah, 100%. Me too. And I think that hyper individualism that gets like pushed in our society also makes us so fucking susceptible to cults and religions and, you know, spiritual groups and things like that, where there's belonging, there's community and belonging. And we don't have healthy references of what it feels like to belong in like true community, where everyone is accepted in all of their individual, you know, individuality and differences and things like that. So like there's like a willingness to abandon the parts of us that are different in order to gain, because it's like, it's a biological drive. Like we need community. Mm-hmm. Like we're humans, we're social creatures. We need that. So we'll abandon ourselves in order to fit into that. And that's really dangerous.
Yeah.
It's scary.
Exactly. And so with that being said, you kind of see why there's like possibly a pipeline where people can take it a little bit too far, but mm-hmm. you have to bring them in and not push them away.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing. Like we can't like attack someone into finding grounding or anything like that. You know, we have to like invite them in a safe way.
Exactly. You know what I just thought of? Almost feels like when you do that, it's almost like how like autistic people try to like ADA autism out of autistic people. It's like you're not going to be able to like be out of, or like, you know, discipline out of me. You know, it has to be an understanding. You have to get to know them and understand how they think mm-hmm. to be able to get them to understand how you think, like meeting them where they are to have them meet you where you are, as mm-hmm. opposed to it being like, well, I see what's wrong there, so I'm kind of like enforce this on you. Even if at the end of the day or at the beginning of it all, the impetus of it is to help save people or to help like give people information. Mm-hmm. The way you do it is very important, because again, if you use tactics like shame and guilt and like bullying at the end of the day, like you're not going to have the effect that you think you're going to have. It's going to create space where it's not safe.
Yeah, it just causes harm. And I do want to like just acknowledge that I think that the concern is in, like, the intention is really pure, but like I feel like the approach that's happening is just misguided. But yeah, 100%. Everything you said.
I did want to ask you a few questions because yeah. one thing I want to do a little bit more is make sure that I highlight the people that I'm talking to. Because even though I like it being like a back and forth conversation, I still like to like, I have a blog series myself that I'm expanding a little bit. So I feel like that's my time to shine because it's just me.
Yeah.
And here I really want to like, you know, have it be a little bit more interview style where like you are talking more than me a little bit. So I guess I've been to like prepare like a little bit more questions, but I have been seeing a lot more of your content, especially now that I'm on Instagram a little bit more. For some reason, Instagram like shows me more of my mutuals than you than TikTok.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I really have appreciated just like how much you've really been unmasking and like kind of deconstructing your own sexuality as well, because I've been realizing a lot in our space as well that like not only thinking outside of the binary, but a lot of us usually are LGBTQIA+ or queer, whatever you want to go by. And so, I just kind of wanted to learn a little bit more about like your journey with that and like how you become like comfortable with like unmasking autism and your sexuality. Like that's a lot. That's brave.
Thank you. Yeah. I really like kind of came to grips. Well, it's been a journey my whole life, but, a couple years ago, I finally like just really, I guess like claimed my queerness. Like I've always been queer and have, you know, been with like men and women both. But there was like so much compartmentalization that was happening in my brain and in my life. And I think so much of that had to do with masking and my religious trauma and all of that stuff that it was like, yeah, I have these experiences and these attractions and this love for, you know, the same sex, but I'm straight. Like that was like my narrative for so long. And, at the same time, I was also like very open about my experiences with other people. So it was weird when I came out, there was only one person in my life that was like, really? Everyone else was like, yeah, we know, like you've been very open about it, you know? But for me, it was like this big revelation, which was really interesting. But, yeah, I was in this like really deep journey of like wanting to understand. And I think it really served me because it helped me get really clear on like my trauma with men and my sexual trauma and like really narrow down what attraction actually feels like to me and what desire actually feels like to me. And that was really important, but I'm kind of at the place now where I'm just super fluid, which I think has just been my set point my whole life with like gender and sexuality, where it's like, I just follow where it feels right, you know, and whoever that is or whoever I'm with or whatever, it's like, there's no, you know what I mean? There's no like limitations. And it took me a long time to get to this place where I have like allowed myself to not have limitations on my gender or sexual preferences or things like that. I feel like I'm not explaining all of this as well as I would like to, but, yeah, I remember being a really, really young kid and having to dress really feminine. Mm-hmm. And part of me really enjoying that. And then another part of me just like feeling so deeply disconnected from like what femininity was. And also, you know, growing up in a really, really like oppressive and dogmatic cult and like having these really rigid, strict ideas of what it meant to be a woman and a girl. And me just like feeling like I didn't, you know, fit in with that at all. And then also like it being very clear that I wasn't a boy either, but like feeling like both and neither at different times. And so I feel like so much of that is really related to autism. I do. And so, the labels that I feel really comfortable with right now are audigender and neuroqueer, because I feel like my neurodivergence like really dictates my sexuality and my gender. And both are just so fluid, you know, there's like no rigidity in either one.
Yeah, I love that. I don't think I've ever heard those terms. You said audigender.
Audigender, yeah. Yeah, so audigender is, it's basically just when, you know, you're autistic and your autism deeply, deeply impacts your perception of your own gender.
That is a very, yeah, I, that is a very interesting concept. Like for me, I'm very hyper aware of that connection, just because of like seeing other people, but like, I'm just now in the beginning stages of like deconstructing that for myself. I've always strongly felt like a woman, and always like very strongly felt feminine, and like have always liked girly things. And as I'm deconstructing that, like part of me is like, well, I had this should in my mind. Well, should I think that I'm not just a girl? I'm like, but no, that's like an out. Then now I started to feel like, oh, just because I'm seeing a lot of other autistic people feel or know that they are not like, yeah, binary, doesn't mean that I have to not be. And I'm like, yeah, I'm very solid. I know that I am very much a woman, but I also am queer as well. And like, I am a baby queer because I grew up I grew up very religious. To this day, like, I still am not like fully out to like my parents. This will be the first time that they hear it when they listen to this episode, which is funny to me. Well, not really, because I tried to tell my mom a couple of years ago. I literally was standing in the kitchen and I was like, Mom, I'm bi. And her reaction was horrendous. And so she was like, what? And I was like, I'm playing, like, because I didn't want to like get into an argument. And this was a few years ago, like before I, you know, can really, you know, but I actually was just talking to my sister last night and we were talking about it. My big sister knows, and like all of my like closest friends know, but like my family, they're still like very like, they have a lot of homophobic thought, like, you know, and it's cultural. Like growing up Black, growing up Christian. And even if you're not like super religious, because we weren't super religious, we were like culturally Christian growing up, you know. So they still have a lot of like, we still get into it sometimes when I try to tell them, like, I like will check them when they say something that's like, you know, homophobic or transphobic or something like that, and I'm like, you know, you shouldn't say X, Y, and Z. And then we'll have these full-blown arguments. And I'm like, and it just reiterates in my mind, like, this is why I'm not like open about like my different attractions. And I've restricted myself because I've only ever been with guys. But like, I know, like, ever since I was younger, I was been attracted to both men and women. And I was like, you know, I don't need to feel like that is part of my identity as well. And as I've been unmasking parts of who I am, a lot of it starting with the people pleaser, which calls me to like mask and hide things. It's making me more comfortable with having these conversations and also like expressing and having these thoughts and like just being me, like whatever.
Yeah, congratulations. It's the, I mean, it's a really big deal to talk about it for the, you know, the first time openly. So just, I'm happy for you. I'm really happy for you.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, it's a little scary just because like, I know, like, just all having to try to have had these conversations in the past, I'm just like, I'm not looking forward to it. But like, I also am tired of not like, just saying it. It's annoying. It's so annoying. And it's pointless too, because like, why?
I mean, people are, and it, it, I imagine it's just so much harder when it's your family, but people are going to have their judgments and their perceptions no matter what, like no matter how you show up. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that I've like really found a kind of like an anchor for me, you know, of just like minding my own business in terms of, you know, like not concerning myself with other people's internal experiences or perceptions of me, and knowing that I can't control it, which is also a people pleasing thing too, you know, it's like wanting to control people's perceptions and experiences and make sure everyone else is good. Mm-hmm. And it's like really freeing to like break out of that and allowing people to have whatever thoughts, opinions, judgments, experiences they're going to have, and just showing up as you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Cause we only get one go around. Like this is the only like iteration of this form, whether you believe in reincarnation or whatnot, this is the only time you're going to live this life. And my philosophy that I'm trying to keep center moving forward is I'm not going to live a life where I'm performing for other people.
Ah, yes.
Anymore, because that's all masking is. That's all like people pleasing is performing for other people when it does nothing for me and I don't get any do-overs. There's no repeat performance, there's no encore, you know, like, and I just want to live a life that like is genuine to me and feels good and doesn't do any harm to anyone else. Like
yes yes, absolutely. That so my brother died in 2018, and the like biggest gift he gave me was that, like, first of all, he was just the most like himself person I've ever known in my life. Like he showed up just fully him in every single experience ever. And so like, and when he died, that like really like stuck with me. It's like, wow, he never pretended for anyone. Like he never loved himself. He never modified himself. He was just him. And I always really admired that about him. I was like, I want to do more of that. But then also just this like realization that like at the end of the day, it's like all we ever have are ourselves, you know, like we're the only people that are ever going to be with us every single second of our life. We're the only person that's ever going to like really understand the ins and outs of all of our experiences and thoughts and feelings and all of that. And like, what a disservice to like, what a disservice to myself to not like fully embrace and accept everything that I am and like have my own back and like be my own best friend and like show up fully as I am in this one life that I have. Like at the end of the day, it's just me. So I'm going to be me. <You know? laughs> and so, yeah. Yeah. So I kind of started my unmasking a couple of years before I found out I was autistic because of losing him and just the wisdom he gifted me and his dad. Yeah. Yeah.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful that you were able to like draw that kind of, you know, strength and like positivity moving forward from such a terrible loss. I'm sorry for your loss. But I love that you were able to see the heavy silver lining and like use that as inspiration, because that is how we should live our lives. Like even like it's unfortunate, but like you never know what day will be your last. Right.
Yeah.
So are you going to continue to waste time living your life for other people when like it could be cut short at any point, at any moment? And then you spent that entire time doing life for other people, because that's what a lot of people do. That's what you do when you listen to that should.
Exactly.
I should be doing this, or I have to be doing this, or this is what I'm supposed to do. And it's like, why? If you ask
why?
then you'll understand that you actually don't need to do that. Yeah. You don't have to. You can just do what you want. And as long as you're not hurting anybody.
Yeah. That was another thing that really stuck with me as well. Like, because my brother in all of his glory, he was so annoying at times. Like, you know, like there were, because he was just like himself all the time. And sometimes it was annoying, but it was like, when he died, like I missed those moments of like, even like being annoyed by him and like wishing, you know, he'd be quieter or whatever, but it was like, it was him. And I realized that the way I was living was like depriving other people of like experiencing all of me as well, you know? And it's like, I think we get kind of, you know, caught up about like, inconveniencing people or annoying people or bothering people, but like the people who really love us, like love us, not just like in spite of, but also like because of that. And that it like really hit home when I lost him of like, you know, that piece of it, that it's like, yeah, I want, when I die, I want people to know all of who I was, not just like this cookie cutter, you know, like mask that I present to people, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, that's a perfect point, because so many people want to be remembered, right? Mm-hmm. And they want to be remembered to be going back to that, like, why are we always fighting? It's us versus them. It's because there's a scarcity mindset. Like, people feel like because we are supposed to fit into this box, there isn't enough. In this mm-hmm. box, it's set up to be exclusionary, right? Yeah. And so, but everybody has those same desires. They want to have community. They want to be remembered. They want to leave, but they don't want to not be special. Mm-hmm. But how can you be special how can you stand out when you kill everything about yourself that is special just to fit into this box? And then you wonder why no one's like paying attention to you, or why you're not able to be yourself. It's because you're not yourself.
Oh my God. Yes. And this is just reminding me of like this experience that I've had my whole life. I felt like people just like didn't know me, which was true. And I didn't understand why it was true at the time, you know, I didn't realize I was like masking. But anytime people would describe me, they would just say, oh, she's so nice, she's so sweet. And that was the only descriptor I ever had. And I was just like, what the fuck? Like, that's like, yeah, that's part of, you know, how I show up. But like, that's not me. That's not like all of me, not even close. But that was the only thing that I would hear repeatedly. Mm-hmm. And since unmasking, like the, you know, and like the past, like 3 or 4 years since my brother's passed, also like, becoming more myself, the descriptors that I get from people and the compliments that I get from people are like actual reflections of me, like who I am, like different aspects of me, not just like, oh, she's so nice. And it's like, yes. It's exactly what you're saying. It's like, we want to be remembered. And I think sometimes when we're like caught up in people pleasing and masking, like we think that that's going to be the thing because we're making other people feel good and feel happy. But like, yes. That isn't the thing. That's just, oh yeah, she's nice. You know,
you hit the freaking nail on the head. Yes, because like I swear, like as I'm like unpacking and I'm thinking about like myself when I was younger, like I just wanted to be accepted, and I've always been a bigger girl. You know, I've always been, and then I've always been like a little awkward, you know, socially. And so I found that I got a lot of acceptance when I was helpful. And I was always like, you know, the smart girl and things like that. So I just basically did a lot. I had no freaking boundaries or anything like that. And that was literally just to like, oh my gosh, like, I'm so sorry. I guess I had a brain fart.
No, it's okay. It happens. It happens all the time.
Oh my goodness. Please, please, please run back your last point.
Yeah. So I was talking about like the people pleasing and making other people feel happy in our presence isn't, and, you know, not showing up as ourselves. Like, we think sometimes that that's what's going to help us be remembered and accepted, but it really just kind of, it's almost like it just turns us into like a non, like a one-dimensional non-human, you know what
thank
I mean?
You. I'm so, thank you, because that's the point I was going to make. Like, I just didn't want to stand out to the point that I would only be helpful, and then I would literally like not, I would like downplay my talents. Like, I can do a lot of things. I really can. And I don't talk about it. I don't show it. And I always felt like if I talked about it, that I would be bragging because I internalized other people's insecurity. Like, and I would just like, you know, oh, because they are insecure about the fact that they can't do it. And they try to make me feel bad about it. So I'm just going to not do it because I don't want other people to feel bad. But at the same time, now I feel bad because I'm suppressing something about myself that I'm proud of and that I like doing and that I shouldn't care if this other person like feels it. I know that now, but like it was a very big part of me growing up. Like I wouldn't talk about singing, I wouldn't talk about dancing, I wouldn't talk about music at all. Like there's a lot of people who know me still today who don't even know that I sing.
Wow. That's so fucking relatable too. I would do this. I'm sure you had it in academics too, because you said that you were really smart growing up, and same, like anytime I would get like good grades or, you know, like I love to draw, like I would keep my like talents and skills and hobbies like so secret. Mm-hmm. So secret. I wouldn't share it with anyone. And when people would notice something about me that was like positive, I would like downplay the fuck out of it because of the same thing of like not wanting to come across as like, I don't know, a know-it-all or cocky or conceited, or I didn't want to make anyone feel bad so that they wouldn't want to like be around me, you know?
Right. But you know, the crazy thing is that I realized, especially in some circles, this actually happened to me because that reminded me of a recent experience. We can't win for losing sometimes, because in some circles, if you don't brag, then it also makes other people feel bad. Like I speak Spanish, right?
Yeah.
And I was in Miami for a work thing. This is back in June, right? And I was there with a bunch of coworkers, and I was the only one that spoke Spanish, and everyone knew I spoke Spanish. Actually, no, there was another girl there that speaks Spanish, but like her Spanish, like she always says that I speak Spanish better than her. Uh-huh. So and everyone there knew that I spoke Spanish, but for me, like, I didn't want to flex. So, like, the person, the waiter came to the table and they started speaking to us in Spanish. And so everybody looked at me, but I was just like, oh, like, you can speak to us in English because everyone doesn't speak Spanish. And at that point, I realized everyone felt like I was shading them by being like, they don't speak Spanish, so they speak in English. Well, but to me, I was saying, I don't want to just sit here and speak to this woman in Spanish and translate for everyone if she could just speak to everyone in English.
Wow, interesting.
And like, I picked up on the shift in tone immediately. Like, they literally looked at me like I shaded them by saying, oh, they don't speak Spanish, speak to us in English. I wasn't saying that to point out that they are lacking something. I was trying to have everyone be on equal footing and have us all understand what this woman was saying.
But, you know, this is such also a perfect example of how, like, those kind of, like, the people pleasing tendencies and trying to make other people uncomfortable like backfires on us. You know, like it's so interesting. I'd lost my train of thought. There was a point that was good that I wanted to make, but it's gone.
That is okay. As you can see, it's been going around. But no, like, yeah, it's so weird. Like, yeah, we can't win for losing sometimes is basically what I was saying.
I was just gonna say, like, I started like kind of understanding like years ago, understanding that my people pleasing was me like trying to control other people's experiences, right? And that's like weird and interesting form of manipulation. And so I consciously have, you know, over time tried to stop doing that. And I am in this practice of like, I try my best not to assume anything or like modify anything for other people. I'm just like, you know, try to be as true to myself as possible. And then instead of assuming and trying to make alterations to the experience for other people, I like just bring it to the table. And like, and also unmasking autism has helped me like kind of, like re-own my directness, because I definitely like stifled that out because of the negative, negative experiences I had with that, because it isn't always accepted. But I've also like gained a lot of communication skills in, you know, like over the years trying to fit into holistic society and stuff. But I feel like my directness is a little bit more tactful than it used to be. And I just like, yeah, I have noticed a really big difference in just my experiences now that I don't do that. And I still fall into it sometimes, but the times that I don't, and I'm just like, hey, would you guys prefer, you know, in that instance, like, hey, would you guys prefer me to talk to them, or should we ask her to speak English or something like that, you know? But it's so interesting, because it's like we have the best of intentions and then it just like blows in our face.
Oh my God. So speaking of intentions, like I saw a video recently that was so like on point, where it was like autistic communication only works if you assume no ill intent.
Yes.
And the reason why we have so many miscommunications with so many neurotypical people is because they are almost always assuming ill intent, and you have to do everything in your power to prove that you're not doing that. And even when you do, most of the time they don't believe you.
Yeah. And often like the more you try to explain it, the more like the less, like the more they think that you have ill intentions. It's so wild. But yeah, that's 100% true. And you know, it's funny, I was in the shower and I was thinking about this. It kind of goes along with this, but kind of not, but it kind of does. I was thinking about this experience when I was in the Sacred Sexuality Mystery School. I had this experience with this man who I, like, my nervous system was just like activated around him. I felt just like initially like unsafe. But I also like felt like I wanted to get to know him. So it was just this really interesting thing. And we ended up just like having a really open discussion about it and kind of like co-regulating and, you know, like titrating into a safe space with each other. But he said this thing that just like really stuck with me, and it translates to autistic communication. He was like, when you treat me like I'm an unsafe person, I feel like an unsafe person. I was like, whoa, yeah, that is so true. Like, you know, whether he is or not, like the fact that I feel unsafe around him automatically makes him feel like he's an unsafe person to be around. And I think that that also like happens with autistic people. And like, you know, when people are assuming that we have ill intention, it automatically makes us think that we must be bad people. And I think that's an experience that we internalize from such a young age, because like that wasn't in our mind, but you know, that wasn't in our consciousness before. But the fact that we're like, you know, showing up with these like really good intentions and people assume negative intentions, then we're like, oh shit, like now I feel like a person with bad intentions. And that creates so much shame in our experience. It's like so wild.
Absolutely. And it's so crazy. I would say that one of the things I'm grateful for being an adult now, going through this at least, is being able to understand that I don't need to internalize those things, or that's what's helped me like move past.
Yeah.
At least like the things I was going through in the workplace and stuff like that. Yeah. Because just learning that lesson as an adult, but when you're a child, you definitely internalize it.
Yeah. And it's interesting being a mother to an autistic child. He isn't officially diagnosed, but he's very autistic. I noticed that like I kind of have to like rewire my brain also in communicating with him, because we have all of these perceptions of like what like rudeness is and things like that. Like I've internalized those myself, even though that's not the way that I even like feel is true or interact with other people. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I notice myself in like these little moments, like assuming ill intent, and I have to catch myself and be like, wait a second. No. This is my sweet pure son. And, you know, just like making a deep, deep practice of always giving the benefit of the doubt and assuming positive intent. And, you know, I'll ask questions and 100% of the time, he's like coming from such a pure place, you know? And it's just like, I could see how if I didn't have that practice and like catching myself, how I could just be doing so much harm to this sweet child.
Yeah. No, that's the beauty of like gentle parenting and like understanding that you need to be able to regulate yourself in order to be able to model healthy emotional regulation to your child, and direct communication and understanding the why behind the what, not just focusing on the what being their behavior or what they're saying. It's the why are they acting this way? Why are they doing these things? And then helping them to understand that and get through it themselves. Like we know we come from a generation of parents who were raised by generations of parents who were going back and back, who did not understand that, who did not look at their children as people, but rather like property, and treated us as such, as opposed to like these people, that these small people who are going to eventually be fully formed individuals. Not giving us the ability to have autonomy, like full autonomy. Like if we're not able to emotionally regulate ourselves, we're going to depend on things outside of ourselves for that. And this is how we get a lot of people who, especially if you're someone who's hyper empathetic and people pleasing, getting hooked up with narcissists, because you're looking for that external validation to help regulate you. If I'm not a help to someone, if I'm not saving someone, if I'm not Captain Save-A-Ho, then I'm not, you know, then I'm not valuable or something like that. Like I really used to feel that way. It was like, I have to help even when I don't want to. Like saying no was a huge boundary for me.
Me too. Yeah, I deeply relate to that, because that was my role all growing up. Like I was the peacemaker of the family, and my mom's just emotional support child, you know, like I was fully responsible for the well-being of everyone in my family at all times, like making sure that everything was, you know, going okay. And a lot of times it wasn't. So it was like a lot of damage control. And it's just like, I took on that role of like, I'm supposed to be the savior. I'm supposed to be the one supporting, and I don't get to have needs myself. I don't get to have boundaries. And part of me like didn't even want to have them at some point, you know, because it's like, what am I going to do? I didn't know anything about myself. Like, what am I going to do with that space? Like, I don't even know. I just want to help you. I just want to help you, you know? And so, yeah, I deeply relate to that, like the unwinding of that and getting to learn myself has been such a journey.
Once again, I want to thank you guys so much for stopping by and spending a little bit of time with me today. I really hope you guys enjoyed this conversation. Make sure if you haven't already, you go back and view all of the previous videos, but especially the previous episode when I spoke with Lilith, to get just a little bit more background when it comes to us talking about our experiences with understanding our autism and how we both have experiences with toxic spirituality. I think that would help give you guys some context if needed. And also make sure you show Lilith some love on all her social media. I will leave links in the description below. As always, you can find me at deconstructing.neuro on TikTok and Instagram. And if you still use the bird app, I am at decon_neuro. You can also follow me at tjamaicapogue on all social media platforms, and also check out my personal website, tjamaicapogue.com. To become a patron, head over to patreon.com/tjamaicapogue. That way you guys can have up-to-date updates on all of my travels. You'll get to know where I am right now as I'm there. Because if you're not a patron, you will not know until I've already left. But if you would like up-to-date, real-time information and behind-the-scenes videos and pictures that I will not post on any of my other social media, make sure you head over to patreon.com and become an official member of the TJ Makeupoke Soul Tribe. I love you guys so much. Make sure you remain safe and sound. And I'm being all touchy and feely right now. But I really appreciate you guys. And I look forward to continuing these conversations and bringing you guys more varied and multifaceted
views into the autistic experience. This is really important to me, and I appreciate your support. I love you guys. Peace and blessings always. Hey.